From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. If ever there was a miracle drug, a medicine that changed our lives, it is the antibiotic. Precious stuff, right? Husband it, use with care. So you'd think. But 80% of all the antibiotics we pump out these days goes into animals and animal feed. Cows, hogs, chickens, turkeys, and more across America chowing down daily on antibiotics in their feed to make them grow faster, to allow them to live in crowded conditions. Health officials are clanging the alarm bell, saying that it is overuse that is breeding antibiotic-resistant superbugs that we can't stop, that kill. The meat industry says, chill out, this hour on point. Our antibiotics, our meat, our superbugs. You can join the conversation. Do you try to use antibiotics judiciously? Do you feel silly, threatened, when they're being poured into meat? Do we have to do it? Joining me first today from Rochester, New York, is Louise Slaughter, 14-term Democratic congresswoman from New York's 25th District, which includes Rochester. She's the only trained microbiologist in Congress. She's pushing two bills right now, the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act and the so-called Data Act, to make clear what's going on, which she introduced with California Congressman Henry Waxman. Congressman Slaughter, Louise Slaughter, thank you very much for being with us. What's your concern?
Oh, hello, Tom. I share the same concern. I so much appreciate your opening, because the advent of antibiotics was one of the most miraculous things that we'd ever faced as a country. I think it was a byproduct in many cases of the Second World War. And interestingly enough, I just realized this not too long ago, but I wrote my master's thesis on the overuse of antibiotics in 1953. I had no clue at that point of what was really going to be happening to antibiotics. I've been fighting with medical profession for years because we knew that antibiotics were not effective against viral infections. But many times are overused for that. But I had no idea that people who raise livestock could buy antibiotics in huge bags and put it into the feed every single day. It's the equivalent of putting antibiotics on your child's Cheerios every morning.
We've got the former head of the FDA, David Kessler, saying that this is a major public health problem because in those factory farm and beyond situations, you could have superbugs breeding because of the way the antibiotics are being used. That we, in the latest numbers, I guess 2011, drug makers sold 30 million pounds of antibiotics for livestock. That's 80% of all reported antibiotic sales in the country.
Absolutely. People are astonished at that. But let me tell you, we're seeing what happens there. If I could be use congressional language here a little bit. I hope everybody will bear with me for that. But it's very difficult oftentimes for us to get legislation to the floor. I'm sure most people wonder why term after term after term I have to refile the very same bill to stop doing that. Now, we've made it very clear, Tom, that we want sick animals treated, obviously.
Yep.
But it's the unspeakable and awful conditions that they grow up in. And the fact that they, as you pointed out, that makes them fatter and they make more money at the market. But it let me just give you an idea of how bad that is for human beings. More people now die in this country, 18,000 a year, from runaway infections that can't be controlled, and more people die of that than of AIDS in the United States.
Wow.
And it's gotten worse. About 2 weeks ago, the head of the Communicable Disease Center in Atlanta, Dr. Frieden, announced with a press conference that we were on the edge of a catastrophe.
Because of these antibiotic-resistant strains.
Exactly. Well, he didn't make that exact connection, but when I spoke with him, we did. And the fact that what had happened, this is brand-new infection. I asked him how many hospitals, hundreds of hospitals in the United States are seeing it. The NIH hospital, and I talked to the head of the human genome, because I've been very much involved in that as well, at NIH. And he talked about this hospital. They had this infection called CRE, and 18 people were critically ill in this one hospital. Six died. And he was telling me how difficult it was to really try to clean up after it, and that they had found that a lot of the infection had pooled in the neck of the pipes under the sinks, and they had to redo the plumbing. I mean, it's really astonishing what we have to go through to try to get rid of something.
But that points out hospitals and the world at large can breed their own antibiotic-resistant infections.
Well, I broke my leg last year, a year ago, and I was in the hospital for 3-4 weeks. I had 3 infections.
So why are you looking at farms?
Because that's where the resistance is coming from. Let me give you the concrete example.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There's a bacterium called Staphylococcus aureus, which is absolutely ubiquitous. It's on everything in this world. It's all over every place.
Mm-hmm.
You would occasionally get a cold that would be associated with Staphylococcus aureus. But it was literally, it's one of the most easily treated things in the world with antibiotics. Now, that has evolved into a thing called MRSA, M-R-S-A, which can kill you in 18 to 24 hours.
And we have a difficulty fighting it with normal antibiotics.
Absolutely.
David Kessler says we're facing an antibiotic resistance crisis.
We are.
What do you want to do about it with this legislation?
Well, what we've done is we've even added a new antibiotic. For a long time, we were only trying to save 7 classes. Now we're to 8. We're seeing more and more of it. I think people want to know if they go to the grocery store and buy dinner, they're not buying something that could kill them. And it's really, I think that's serious. We've had an awful trouble. The FDA and I spar over this a lot. The FDA has just allowed 3 more years of hoping that voluntarily that they will stop the overuse of antibiotics. I don't believe that will be the case.
I thought the FDA was supposed to be protecting consumers here.
Yes. I pointed that out. When we just got this absolutely conclusive evidence about MRSA coming directly from farmyards, that the DNA is exactly the same, I did write to the commissioner and tell her that we could not delay this any longer. I even contemplate waiting 3 more years to try to do something about it. Makes no sense at all because, as I said, we've had to add a new classification of antibiotics because it's getting worse.
The FDA collects data.
A lot more.
Yeah, they collect data on all this, but they do not disclose it, so we don't know exactly what's going on. Why would the FDA not disclose data?
I wish I knew. We've had
because the industry doesn't want it disclosed.
Well,
we saw that pressure in guns and firearms.
And I've had one secretary in this cabinet say that this was junk science. I did point out I had 2 degrees in science. I didn't know how many he had. I really, but this is not new to me. It took me 14 years to pass a bill called genetic non-discrimination, so that because of your genetic makeup and all of us have faulty genes, you couldn't lose your job or your health insurance.
What would you do? What do you want to do legislatively to address this, Congresswoman?
I want John Boehner to put it on the floor.
What is it?
What
would it do?
Oh, well, what it says is that we would not be able to use those 8 classes of antibiotics anymore for animal feed.
Just
mostly what we hope for is what's happening in Europe, and even China is talking about it, absolutely withdrawing the use of antibiotics as part of daily feed.
Can we have
only
our current system?
Only use it for sick animals, only for sick animals.
Can our current system of meat production, of raising livestock very often in factory farms, can it possibly work without antibiotics where they're in such close quarters? Are you really saying remake American agriculture?
They have to clean up, and that's an added benefit as far as I'm concerned.
What would this
and
do to...
We do have examples of where that works. In Denmark, it has worked beautifully. They have saved money by not buying all those antibiotics. Their animals are happier and better raised, and certainly the consumer.
What would it do to meat prices in the store? What would it mean for meat prices?
I think that most people would be willing, and studies have shown that people would be willing to pay 5 cents more a pound to get rid of that.
And does the
we have to get rid of that? Look, what's the option? We'd just go ahead and let all antibiotics be unusable? That we would we could reach a point where strep throat could be a fatal disease? Do we want to go to that? Our option is to stop that overuse. We're destroying one of the greatest medical breakthroughs that we have ever enjoyed the benefit from. It just doesn't make any sense.
How close are you getting to getting this on the floor?
Let me tell you, when I had another bill called the Stock Act, 60 Minutes took up, and overnight I got 268 sponsors. So I think what you're going to be very helpful today by letting us talk about this today, and thank you for it, because we need to have American public aroused. We need mothers and fathers and grandparents and everybody else to say, hey, wait a minute. we're not going to put up with this anymore. It is totally unnecessary, and we are destroying the things that we count on to save our lives.
How close are you to getting this into position where...
Nowhere. It wasn't until Nancy Pelosi got elected Speaker of the House in 2007 that we were able to pass genetic non-discrimination. As I said, I've had to put that bill in every 2 years for 14 years.
What's the lobby that's keeping this off the docket?
Bush had said he would like to sign that bill. He was wonderful to push that.
Fair enough. Let's look now. I've just cut you for another minute. What's standing in the way of getting this? What interest is standing in the way of getting this on the floor for a vote?
Well, we're not getting a heck of a lot of help, as I pointed out, from the FDA, but the biggest interest is the commercial farms.
Well, if it's as easy...
The large agriculture industry.
Well, if it's as easy and healthful and minimally costly as you describe, why wouldn't they support it?
Because they believe that they can obviously keep those the cattle, livestock, in the deplorable conditions that they're living in, and they believe that they're making money with a fatter animal. At the same time, they're destroying something that all of us need to live. Perhaps we may be unlucky enough to get some disease one day that cannot no longer be cured by antibiotics. And how stupid would that be?
Louise Slaughter, Congresswoman from New York's 25th District, with us today from Rochester, New York. Congresswoman, thank you for joining us. We're going to dive on in. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the 80% of the antibiotics in this country being fed to livestock, going into the meat we eat, and whether that system, that volume, is helping breed superbugs that may kill us. We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. There's a lot of debate about this, but there's no question that doctors are seeing more of these antibiotic-resistant superbugs, could cause worldwide health crisis. We're reading in the headlines here lately. It may be in a hospital near you, most likely is in some degree. And now there's science that's saying, look, one of the places this is being bred right in the farms that are bringing us so much of our meat. You've got people who know this world very well, and I want to bring them in. With us from Washington right now, Lance Price, a microbiologist and professor of environmental and occupational health at George Washington University, pioneering the use of genomics to trace the origins of drug-resistant diseases. Lance Price, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
And with us from Lawrence, Kansas, is Mike Apley. He's professor of veterinary medicine, head of the Department of Production Medicine and Clinical Pharmacology at Kansas State University. He's got his own farm, his own livestock. He's done research funded by the FDA, the USDA, pharmaceutical companies, producer organizations, also advises some big swine producers, knows the actual production side very, very well from a veterinarian's point of view. Mike Apley, thank you for joining us from Lawrence, Kansas.
Good morning, Tom.
So you heard a bit of Louise Slaughter, and you know the concern that is so vivid among a lot of people. How do you look at what currently is going on, Mike? You know about the superbugs that are showing up. You know how the livestock production is going on. Do we have a problem, Mike?
Well, let me start out by saying that the food animal producers are equally concerned that they're not part of producing something like this, and I went some at seeing them portrayed as people just interested in a buck with absolutely no concern. I mean, we feed the same thing we produce to our kids. And it's hard to be in this conversation sometimes and try to set facts and figures straight without seeming like you're trying to deny. But I'd like to address the 80% figure.
Okay, please.
That figure comes from FDA-reported sales data and for both human and animal size. And one of the first things that the FDA says on their website, and this is that it's not appropriate to use those to compare because they're sales figures. And, for example, the animal figure also includes the companion animal uses because we can't.
What do you mean by that, companion animal
uses? For dogs, cats, horses.
Oh, I see.
Things like that because, we might sell drug A that is labeled for multiple species, and we don't have any way of figuring out where it's going.
So let's say the number's off by, some number of percent. But you've got the former head of the FDA, David Kessler, putting it out there as a signal of why we should be concerned. I mean, I don't suppose you're saying that we don't have gigantic antibiotic sales for livestock and meat production.
We do have a substantial amount. About 30% of it is the ionophores of the total, which has – I haven't even seen a – theory on how that would be related to
it. What does that mean?
It's a class of drugs that are used for growth promotion and disease control. And they're a specific class not used in humans, and I haven't even seen where there's any co-resistant selection or anything. So there's – when you start talking about the amount of drugs that are actually used for growth promotion purposes, that's 30% right off the top that
you would take. You would take out of that danger zone. Okay.
And the other issue is for growth promotion, we published a study where we estimated use based on a 2006 USDA survey and a veterinary survey. And we found that when you look at medically important drugs for humans, of the classes Representative Slaughter talked about 13% of the feed use in swine is growth promotion of those antibiotics. Mm-hmm. So it's not 70 or 80%. And one of the other things we look at, and I know Dr. Price is an expert in this, and will mention this too on the MRSA, but if you look at the
MRSA, that's one of the superbug categories.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Infectious Disease Society of America, Bad Bugs, No Drugs Update in 2009, in the human side, they list six primary pathogens called the escape pathogens. And that's the first letters of six different bacterial genera that are causing the main problems as identified by the human medical profession.
Okay.
And I'll rattle them off real quick. Mm-hmm. It's Enterococcus staph aureus, which would include the MRSA, the MRSA, Klebsiella, Acinetobacter, Pseudomonas, and the Enterobacters. And so as we start talking about MRSA and we start talking about a foodborne disease such as Salmonella, which doesn't show up on resistance, the most problems for resistance in humans, you know, the discussion needs to be to frame this, that yes, there's a lot of resistance issues in humans. How many of those are actually stemming from a livestock origin?
Let me ask you something, if I may, Mike. Mm-hmm. You know a lot of this production, swine in particular, you've paid attention to. And I think I know you've said that when you go into a big swine production farm these days, you have to shower to get in there and shower before you get out. Now, why is that?
Disease control, and that's another thing I always wince at a little bit, is when we hear modern agriculture characterized as the terrible, deplorable, unsanitary conditions. And one of the things I always do is invite people out. Let's see a facility. The manure goes through slats into a pit. The pigs have free access to food and water. Ventilation's carefully controlled. When the pigs are controlled so that when a group comes in, it comes in all as one group, and then when it leaves, the facility is steam cleaned and then disinfected before the next group comes in. We know where pigs come from. We know where they go. It's carefully controlled for disease. They're even putting filters on the air inlets of some of the modern systems so that viruses can't get in. Mm. So there's a tremendous amount of focus, vaccines, how the animals are moved, the facilities, on preventing the need for antibiotics.
With all that, when the stakes are so high, if Congressman Slaughter is correct and we could pull a lot of these antibiotics out of this arena and maybe only pay 5 cents more a pound for our meat, why not do it when the stakes are as high as they could be here?
Well, I disagree with Congresswoman Slaughter on the timeline or, you know, what's going to happen with the growth promotants. I don't know of anyone who's going to fight that. I think we're going to see our growth promotion claims gone as soon as...
We're going to stop using antibiotics for growth promotion? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and that's what Guidance 209 says, and the FDA is
voluntary
saying,
right now.
It is, but if you don't do it, it's going to become regulatory, and I don't know any of those companies that think they're going to fight that. So that's going to be gone. And now we really talk about prevention and control uses. And
Mike Epley, stand by in Kansas for a minute. It's great to have you with us at University of Kansas State University. Excuse me, Lance Price at George Washington University, microbiologist there. You've done a lot of work in this, Lance. What do you see here? I mean, we heard Louise Slaughter's quite vivid concern. It's very easy to resonate with that. Nobody wants to think about our farms turning out superbugs that turn around and kill us. Mike Epley says, well, you know, it's not as bad as David Kessler is suggesting, as some of these numbers would suggest. We're very attuned to staying on top of this. We're going to make some improvements here. Let's all settle down. How do you see what's going on, Lance?
Well, I see a problem, and I see I've seen evidence of problems for as long as I've been studying this. And I think that, you know, Stuart Levy pointed out the problems as early as the 1970s, showing that when antibiotics were introduced to farms, that antibiotic-resistant bacteria would emerge very quickly, and even showed that those would then spread to the farm families. And so we've known about this for a long time. And the work that we're doing at George Washington University is taking these advances in genomics and applying them to start to quantify that transfer of antibiotic-resistant bacteria from food animals to people. But, you know, the evidence is already there that this is a problem. And I think one thing that Dr. Apley said and that I hear a lot is that, oh, we don't have the numbers right. You know, those estimates are – you're using the estimates wrong. Oh, you need to reevaluate mm-hmm. your estimates. But one of the things that we're trying to get right now is some transparency in the industry. We want data. We want clear data. We want to know what antibiotics are being used in which animal species and for what purposes, for what durations. If we had those numbers, if we were collecting and reporting those numbers accurately, then we could dissolve this argument and start to have some real face-to-face discussions about, all right, which of these are appropriate and which are not.
I want to hear more about the risk, but Mike Epley, let's just pause right there for a second. Why on earth should we not know how much of this is being used when the whole population of the country, the world, is vulnerable if things go wrong here? Why isn't the American meat production world willing to just make it transparent? It's our health and our diet on the line, Mike.
You know, Tom, it's not that we don't want to know. And personally,
I'd love to see it. Why aren't they doing it? Why aren't we requiring it? Why is the FDA not just saying, do it?
Right now, they've actually put out a request for input. They're gathering input on how they'd do it. If you look at the DanMap system in Denmark as an example of what's going on there.
Where they're going the other way. They're going against antibiotics in Denmark.
Right. And so what they have, the system where you have to report everything that's used. So, for example, veterinarians give a cow a shot. They have to report that. Their system gets about 200,000 records monthly. And that's with producing
You're saying the burden of reporting is too onerous.
Yeah, and the concern is the veterinarian will need to do it. So what I'm telling you is we need to work out a system that is workable. We're already overstretching our food animal veterinarians, underserved in some areas. How would we make it work so that we could do it? And number two, the question we're asking ahead of time is exactly how would it be interpreted and against which antimicrobial resistance data would we evaluate the effects?
I mean, I'm not even sure why we leave that up to the industry. I grew up on a farm. In those days, we were not using antibiotics. And I moved a lot of feed, but it wasn't with antibiotics. I don't know if we could ever get back to that. But since we are and since the stakes are so high, I mean, Lance, is it too much to ask for transparency here?
I have to say, look, you know, Representative Slaughter talked about this at the beginning. Antibiotic-resistant bacteria are one of the greatest threats to public health that we face today. We have to tackle this. We have no choice. And, you know, we have the data and human medicine down to the prescription. We know what drugs are being used for what purposes, and there are rules about this. Meanwhile, in food animal production, these things can be bought by the ton and mixed in feed and then distributed to farms. And you know, we need to know these data. We have a right to know these data. And you know, I just can't underscore enough how important this issue is. You know, we keep hearing about, it's almost every month now we hear about the emergence of new bacteria. And Dr. Apley mentioned the escape pathogens. And I can tell you that when we look in meat, we find all of the escape pathogens. We see all of these species.
What do you
species.
Mean exactly there for we lay people, escape pathogens?
Dr. Apley mentioned the most dangerous drug-resistant pathogens.
They're in the meat?
They're not just in
the feed trough, in the feed lot. They're in the meat, in the store, on the kitchen counter?
Exactly. So let me just tell you two of those. Mm-hmm. So Staph aureus and E. coli. E. coli is one of the most important pathogens in the United States today. E. coli causes millions, literally millions of infections. And I'm not talking about diarrhea like we usually think about E. coli. I'm talking about literally millions of bladder infections, hundreds of thousands of kidney infections, and 36,000 to 40,000 deaths due to blood infections. That's a special kind of E. coli called XPEC, or extraintestinal pathogenic E. coli. When we look in, particularly in poultry products in the United States, we find these XPEC. We find the same strains that are killing literally thousands of Americans.
So when they say wash the cutting board after you chop up the meat, you're saying no kidding, because it could be right there.
Exactly, and I'm glad you mentioned the cutting board.
Sounds like we lost Lance for a second here. Let me get a caller or two in here, if I may. Jason's calling from Boston. Jason, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm wondering where the pharmaceutical companies, the makers of these antibiotics, are falling on this issue, whether or not they're supporting the legislation. Because to me, it seems like they're either having to make a decision for immediate profits or the longevity of their profit, their product.
Yeah, I mean, the answer may be obvious there, but Mike Apley, what about it? You say farmers want to do the right thing here, but then the producers of the antibiotics have a lot of volume moving here. Presumably, they want to keep that volume selling, Mike.
Yeah, and I'm not associated, you know, as a pharmaceutical manufacturer, so I really can't speak to him. I can tell you I've had conversations with him about the resistance development and exactly what's going on and how through judicious use we might minimize that. But I'd need to let them speak for their position on it.
But we can well imagine that they're in there. Sandy in Essex, New York. Sandy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think? What do you know, Sandy?
Well, I'm Sandy Lewis, and we run Lewis Family Farm here in Essex. It's a well-known operation covered in the New York Times. We supply Deerfield Academy with their ground beef. It's on their website with an exclusive provider. The head of Deerfield, Dr. Curtis, whose husband is a cardiologist, simply will not buy beef off the system.
Is your meat produced with antibiotics or not?
Of course not. It's organic and it's grass-fed. And as a matter of fact, we have at the Lewis Family Farm the only USDA-certified grass-fed farm in the nation.
What do you see coming with the – I mean, that makes you a real outlier. So do we have a problem in the mainstream production, Sandy?
I can't speak about mainstream. I can speak about my farm and Deerfield Academy and Fresh Direct in New York. We've supplied them as well. In my belief, it's real simple. I'm 74 years of age. I come out of Wall Street. I'm a well-known guy. I don't make it up. I'm not into delusional behavior. Antibiotics of the type we're using on all these farms, and these farmers know it. I don't know what these academics think they're talking about, but the farmers themselves know this because they're getting sick. And the bottom line is, this is deadly. The New York Times has a SWAT team all over this. I don't know if they're going to have the courage to print it, but they know it. The best guy they had was Gardner Harris. They transferred him to India. He's a brilliant man, and he understands this very, very well. Your program is hitting the nail right smack on the head. This is a deadly mess. It's affecting the country. It's affecting our children.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about antibiotics being used in meat production in this country on an awful lot of farms in a great, great volume. And whether and how widely that may be, breeding superbugs that get back into our system and can be absolutely deadly. Antibiotic use, as you may have heard from your own doctor, is not something to be taken lightly. You don't want to do it too casually or too much. You want to do it carefully. There's a lot going into livestock feed in this country, and a fair number of people are worried about it. We heard from Louise Slaughter, congresswoman from New York, who's trying to push legislation that would cut back on this. Lance Price is a microbiologist at George Washington University. He's doing a lot of research on the genomics here, tracing the origins of drug-resistant diseases. He sees them going back to some of these agricultural practices. Mike Apley knows that realm very well. He joins us from Lawrence, Kansas. Kansas State University with us today. You can join us as well. Lots of comments on this. Kevin says 2 years vegan and never going back. Jennifer says, we don't buy meat at the store. My husband is an excellent hunter. He's got our freezer full of venison, bear, duck, trout, perch, grouse, pike, and rabbit. No antibiotics, but I'm not sure everybody has time for that. And Leah says, absolutely figures into my shopping, especially when my young son is concerned. I buy local pastured meat, eggs, dairy, as much as we can afford. But again, not everybody's doing that. Maybe not everybody can afford that. Dave in Boston, thanks for calling, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm okay. What's your experience?
So a couple years back, my wife contracted MRSA. For the best that we and the doctors could tell, it happened at the gym. It was during the summer. She had some mosquito bites, and we think that was the point of entry.
And this was the antibiotic-resistant MRSA. How tough was it?
It was terrible, actually. She was misdiagnosed twice. She had what she thought was a rash or a skin infection. She went to the dermatologist. They gave her medication for strep bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And things kept getting worse. So about 2 or 3 months down the road, we ended up taking her to the emergency room. She was unable to walk. She had huge lesions on her legs, and the emergency room personnel said she was 24 to 72 hours away from death.
Wow.
At the point we brought her in there.
So what are you hearing when you, and she, did she recover, Dave?
She did. It took about a year for her to feel 100%, and it's been about 8 months since then. And, you know, there's tremendous amount of anxiety around, any minor abrasion even.
Hers came, you're thinking, maybe picked up at the gym. What are you thinking when you hear this big debate about livestock, meat production?
Well, personally, I'm a meat eater. I try to go for the naturally raised, the farm-raised, free-range stuff when I can. I can't always afford that. I personally feel a lot of the activity in our culture is driven by ignorance and greed. So I tend to side with people like the congresswoman and the caller from New York who have something of an alarmist attitude. But I tend to think that people are generally missing it. When my wife was in the hospital, she wasn't bathed. She was there for 8 days. Her sheets were never changed. So I think in general, people just don't know what's going on, don't know how to deal with it, are unprepared. And I think it's a lot worse than the general public believes it is. There's a phenomenon, maybe it's human nature, maybe it's just in America, where people get really involved in issues once they've had personal experience.
Right, but if it doesn't hit you, don't think about it. Dave, I'm so glad that your wife came back from that, but what a trial. I mean, nobody wants to go down that road. Mike Apley, I'm sure you're not thinking of farmers who want people to go down that road. Lance Price, you're doing the research to try and figure out how to keep it from happening. But there's a story. Once it happens, it can be really dire. Nikki in Madison, Connecticut. Nikki, you're on.
Hi there. I'm a farmer here in Madison, Connecticut, and I raise chickens, ducks, and rabbits. And I just wanted to call and say that I never, ever have any need for antibiotics on my farm. We raise our animals outdoors with access to pasture, fresh, clean water, and sunshine, and that has been the only remedy we've needed for any.
They never, ever get sick? That sounds pretty miraculous. They never get sick?
No, of course. Of course they get sick, but never to the point where we've needed to treat them with antibiotics. We're an organic farm, so we can't treat with antibiotics even if we wanted to, but I've never come across a problem that I couldn't treat with some apple cider vinegar and some moving them somewhere nice and clean and fresh. And I understand the need that for some antibiotics, but the way that we're using them is just completely unnecessary.
A little apple cider vinegar and you're off to the races. Mike Apley, how about that? What if we just pulled out all the antibiotics here and started using apple cider vinegar to raise livestock in this country? What would the implications be of a big pullback from this, Mike?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell. Obviously, as we can tell from our callers, there's a lot of angst about the nature of the production systems, and we have a wide variety from the organic farms onto more intensely managed units, and we all have a lot of opinions about those. There's three classes of antibiotic approvals. There's treatment, there's prevention and control, and there's growth promotion. And I'm convinced that growth promotion is going to go away probably in 4 to 5 years as soon as we figure out how.
There's been a lot of antibiotic moved to exactly for that for a lot of years now, but you think that'll go?
Yeah, I think so, and there'll be different opinions on that. The prevention and control uses are probably where people have the most concern. And if we take those
This is
away,
where they're using antibiotics kind of prophylactically so that if they're in, I don't know, crowded conditions, whatever, intensely managed, as you say, that they're not so vulnerable to disease.
In prevention is when we know there's a certain time it'll happen and that may be used sometimes and not others. And control is when we have a disease outbreak occurring in a group of animals and we use them. It's hard to predict exactly what will happen. Probably in the near term, we'd see some increased disease pressure, some increased disease. And I'm not an expert on Denmark. I've studied some and still a student of that.
Where they've moved very, very steeply away from antibiotics.
They first started by banning growth promotion, and then that was 98, 99. And then they saw a rise in therapeutic use of antibiotics, by my calculations, about 65% increase in the use for treatment, minimal prevention with a veterinarian prescription. And then they've really cranked down starting in 2010 and 2011 with the yellow card system and dropped it, I'm trying to remember, about 20% now. And one of the studies has found some increased lesions, signs of disease at the slaughter plant. Since they've done that. So there would be an effect. I don't pretend I can quantify that.
They're on a steep path away from it. Lance Price, what would you like to see happen?
Well, I would like to see both a system of tracking antibiotics, tracking infections like the DAN map that Dr. Apley mentioned earlier, but also to see us take the same aggressive stance against all non-therapeutic use of antibiotics, including routine disease prevention. This is the place where, as Dr. Apley said, the growth promotion is just so clearly, unfavorable by most people when they understand how we're using these life-saving antibiotics as production tools. But when it comes to routine disease prevention, I think we have a little battle there to fight. But in my opinion, if the way you're raising these animals results in them being sick every time and needing the application of antibiotics, then the system needs to be reengineered. We need to find ways to not have these what we call production diseases, these diseases arising because of the way we produce the
animals. Do we need just less intense production? And what about demand? How do we supply it? Or should we just be eating less meat, Lance?
Those are the solutions that food animal producers have to find, but they need the impetus to find those, right? So we need to say, look, these antibiotics, we value these antibiotics. We know we have to protect them, so you can no longer use them this way. They'll find a way to produce the animals. And we have great models in Denmark. We have domestic models of people producing animals very efficiently without the use of antibiotics.
Let me ask you, here's a listener, Ron, who asks on Facebook. He says, I hope someone touches on the other effects of antibiotic overuse. And I don't know about this, but you tell us, Dr. Price, that antibiotics can act like estrogen in the body, that they may be tied to obesity problems, low sperm count, cancers, and he goes on. Are there effects like that, Lance Price?
I think the study of those effects are all really just in their infancy, and so I really can't comment on that.
Megan, in Melrose, Massachusetts. Megan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to make the point that as consumers, we sort of do have to take things into our own hands because I don't feel like the FDA is doing enough to protect us. And I think that the only way that things will change is if the demand changes, if people just say, we will not accept this anymore and don't buy anything with antibiotics. That's when the meat consumers will start listening, in my opinion.
So act on what you hear. Megan, I appreciate your call. Lance Price, Mike Apley, stand by. With us right now from New York is Stephen McDonald. He's founder and CEO of Applegate Farms. They sell antibiotic-free processed meats. Stephen McDonald, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Why did you go antibiotic, I guess, from the get-go? And, is that a system the whole country could adopt without antibiotics, I should say?
We believe it is. The industrial farm model claims their system is the only safe, scalable, affordable way to feed the world. So my question is, how can a food system be healthy and safe if by solely relying on antibiotics, it's putting the entire world at risk? The largest recalls of meat in the last few years have been related to antibiotic-resistance bacteria. In 2012, 32 million pounds of ground turkey had to be recalled because of antibiotic-resistant strains of salmonella. Does that sound safe to you? We've been in business 26 years. We'll sell over 30 million pounds of meat, and we use no antibiotics in any of those products. Less than 1% of our animals get sick. What Big Ag is not saying, nobody disputes using antibiotics on sick animals. That's what they were designed to do for humans and for animals. The problem is Big Ag discovered that if you use persistent uses of antibiotics, you could create a low, cheap economic model to produce meat, which gave them a competitive advantage. And the way, there's only three ways they can do it. They can overcrowd, they can accelerate their growth rates, and they can feed them cheap feed. All of those conditions, which those intensive farming systems operate on, because that's how they get the economic advantage, that all creates a systemic diseased environment that requires antibiotics to be used 24/7. And that's the misuse of antibiotics to create an economically cheap product is what is not sustainable.
But we've built a huge industry around that. And you know, Mike Apley is suggesting, look, we can manage this. It can be done.
It's when they, and I agree with Dr. Apley, I think they will get rid of subtherapeutics. I think they, you know, antibiotics that are used as growth promoters are need to be phased out. What I can't understand is why industry doesn't take action on a voluntary basis in a public way to do this. Why wait 3 or 4, you know, years to do this and continue at risk? We can say we raise millions of pounds and 1% get sick. Now, do we treat them? Of course we treat the 1%, but then we segregate them and they don't get sold in under our label. So it can be done. They don't want to lose the economic advantage they have, but their argument that it's the only way to feed the planet makes no sense because the system is broken. It's not working.
George in Bridgewater, Massachusetts. George, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I want to make 3 quick points and applaud Congresswoman Slaughter for her efforts. One, the FDA is really just undermanned and underfunded, and so a hard job is, you know, really impossible. I don't fault them. Two, we should not be surprised at side effects if we feed an animal poison for a long period of time and then eat the animal. It's a very targeted poison. I'm not saying one thing causes this other thing, but we should not be surprised at side effects. And two, for people who have been hit hard in recent years, which is a lot of people.
Hit hard in what way? Hit hard in what way, George?
Well, economically.
Oh, I see.
I mean, if you're at the supermarket and you are picking out meat, I'm a person who reads those labels. I pay attention to that, but it is agonizing to pay twice as much sometimes, or even if it's, you know, $2 more a pound for whatever it is you're buying. It's a hard choice when you're saying I'm buying this meat for my kids, and I have to
absolutely
buy cheap stuff with stuff in it I don't want.
George, our time is short. Mike Apley, if we go to a much less antibiotic-intensive meat production path, what about the price of meat in this country, Mike?
I think you'd see a short-term jump. I think just as we've seen in other systems, our producers want to lose that cost. They want to lose that need. And there's been one very important group that we've left out of the conversation mm-hmm. that's also having a huge impact on that, and that's the veterinarians. Veterinarians are also very aware of this. I speak to a lot of them. We discuss resistance. We discuss our use. One of the calls I've made is we need to reevaluate whether we're still getting the effects out of some of these feed uses that we used to.
Feed with antibiotics. But, I mean, that kind of makes me more nervous because if even in the industry you're not getting the effects.
Well, no, I'm not saying we're not.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is we need to make sure we are. And
yeah.
So the veterinarians are aware of it. Producers are aware of it. The concerns that have been voiced in this program I completely understand. I'm not trying to minimize those or reject those.
Yeah.
I think, as you said, we've got an industry. We've got a lot of people that are families that produce in, if you want to call it, the conventional way.
Yeah.
And they're concerned too, and they want to do the right thing. So I don't think vilifying the industry is the way to go, but I it's not something you can turn on a dime. And one of the reasons for the 3 years at FDA that they're giving that is because you've got to change labels. And once the labels are changed, then that's the way it has to be used on the farm.
We've got big stakes. Stephen McDonald, you know this industry well. We've got 20 seconds here. Do you think it will voluntarily change?
No, I don't think they'll voluntarily change. But I do agree with Mike Apley that they are good people wanting to do the right thing, but they're invested in a system that needs to change and they need to be pushed along.
That investment is big. Listeners, you've got to pay attention and raise your voice here as well. There are a lot of intersecting interests around this big issue. Stephen McDonald at Applegate Farms, appreciate your being with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Lance Price at George Washington University, microbiologist there. Good luck with your work, Dr. Price. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Dr. Mike Apley at Kansas State University. Mike, thank you so much for your insights today.
You're welcome.
Let's push this all in the right way. Listeners, thanks for your insights as well. Thanks for joining us here and online. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.